Hello and welcome to the Recon Rod. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And we are here for our third and final Vuelta a España show.
Unless the Vuelta goes into overtime.
Unless cycling suddenly creates an overtime rule structure and then the Vuelta goes into overtime.
Sure, it makes it more compelling for audiences. So I think this is on the UCI's list. Sources inform me.
I'd say that this has been a relatively compelling race far. I mean, a whole lot has gone down since we last got together and recorded a podcast. We last spoke on the first rest day for Vuelta show number 2, at which point Chris Froome looked like he was still in position to win this race. He had just put up a great ride in the mountains, and Nairo Quintana seemed like a strong contender to challenge him. Since then, things have sort of changed a little bit.
Yeah, we had Froome with, you know, what appeared to be an off day that he sometimes has, turned out to be a broken foot. And then Nairo Quintana, who had been my pick to do better, you know, really just lost a ton of time, had to be lifted off his bike at the end of one of the stages. Some illness. Normally he has illness in the first week and it's not a big deal. Clearly not the case here. And meanwhile, we had Tom Dumoulin, the early leader, the guy everyone was kind of waiting for him to just sort of collapse and disappear, has hung around really, really stubbornly at the front of this event.
It's been pretty amazing. Every day it's been sort of waiting for Tom Dumoulin to crack, and then it just hasn't happened. He's there every time. I mean, he's lost some time, but he hasn't cracked. He hasn't gone pop. You know, he hasn't lost 10 minutes on the stage, which is what I expected. I think a lot of people expected. I'd say it's been a wacky Vuelta so far, and the Vuelta's kind of always wacky, but there have been some things that have happened so far in this Vuelta that have been even more surprising than I was expecting from the Vuelta in its typically wacky fashion.
Yeah, it's not even you look at this course and you think, obviously, the race is optimized for wackiness, but a lot of it has really been rider-driven, has been, you know, how the race is unfolded-driven, and some of that is related to the course, but it's not like there was an obvious section at 25-30% grade where the race went crazy. It was really just, you know, every time there's a separation between groups in the race, somebody is not where they're supposed to be. It's very organically unpredictable. As crazy as the course has been, it hasn't felt, at least to me, it hasn't felt forced.
Yeah, and it's been the closest Grand Tour by leaps and bounds so far this season. To me, it's something where by this point in the race nowadays, I kind of expect a race to pretty much be decided, or decided as much as a race can be, to the point where, you know, by this point in the Giro or this point in the Tour, the last couple of years, it's been the sort of thing where I've thought, okay, unless a crash takes the leader out of contention, he is going to win. Whereas this race, I don't feel that way.
Yeah, I think that's the nature of the modern Grand Tour, is to have the Team Sky protocol, where you go and you get a bunch of time, and then you ride as boringly as possible to defend it, and you hope you don't lose too much by the end of the race. And that's a very successful strategy. It's one you see most of the time, I think, because there are good teams and good riders on good programs, and they're really, you know, set up to hit that sort of let's make this over by the second rest day kind of pattern. And it's really cool every so often to get a race that totally blows that apart.
Yeah, I don't want to be too critical of that strategy. I think a lot of people are because it's boring, but I don't want to be critical of it because it wins races. So why would I expect the, you know, famous SkyTrain to do anything different when that's what wins them races? But it is pretty enjoyable to actually see something so close after 2 weeks of racing and so unexpectedly. So
yeah, it's the GC race. You know, it's everybody wants to see the GC race, as unlikely as it is. But as much as I think more attention should be paid to non-GC portions of a stage race, like, you know, there's no reason to be like, you know, this is totally overblown. You know, it's just the GC race. Like, let's embrace it now that it's close, you know?
Yeah, I'm on the same boat. I usually try to get as much out of the stage battles as possible. And I know a lot of people don't necessarily feel that way and get kind of bummed out when a race is decided early on, but haven't had to worry about that with this race. I mean, the stage battles have been great. We just watched Frank Schleck beat Rodolfo Torres. That was a great one-on-one in the final climb, the final summit finish of the race. And then 10 minutes later, we're treated to an awesome battle in the final 1,000 meters on just absurd double-digit gradients after a really hard day.
Yeah, and a very TV-convenient gap. You know, you didn't have to cut between the groups that often. You got to see Joaquin Rodriguez really going for it. Just, I mean, yeah, that's his type of finish, and he didn't go from 5K out. But even on a stretch like that, it's like almost like the Murdoch-Huy, where if you attack and blow, you're going to lose 2 minutes. And he checked behind his shoulder occasionally, but when he went, it was like Joaquin Rodriguez is going to do what he's going to do here and doesn't really care about the rest of the field. It was very cool to see.
I will say that Astana has sort of been playing the role of the SkyTrain, and not just in this race. They did it in the Giro as well.
Yeah. They've been kind of doing it since, you know, the beginning of this week. They haven't, you know, they were bad enough early in the race that Oleg Tinkoff tweeted about how bad they were, prompting apparently a hilarious vine from Astana directed at Oleg Tinkoff of them popping champagne bottles after the 1-2 finish and GC retaking on that huge, ridiculous mountain day.
That's true. It's only been kind of the last couple of days that they've done it. But what a great job by Mikel Landa today to set the pace on that final climb. I was expecting attacks from a little further out, and nobody went until the last kilometer, which worked out really well for Aru, because it looked like he was kind of suffering maybe from a hunger knock there on the way up. And he was at the back of the bunch, and it seemed like if anybody had, you know, had the guts to attack, that he might have been dropped, but nobody did. He worked his way back through, and it ended up that he didn't lose much time at all.
Had the guts or was sufficiently not exhausted.
Yeah, that may have been more what it was.
Pretty brutal week. Like I believe I predicted the entire peloton would quit bike racing today. And while it didn't quite happen, it may be a less urgency among the GC favorites to chase down the escapees.
Yeah, I'd say insofar as your figurative prediction could have come true, that was pretty close to it. Nobody really had the energy to do anything. I mean, Mikel Nieve tried a quick little strike on the penultimate climb, but other than that, it was rough.
And I think. As surprising as the race has been, we really have to look at Tom Dumoulin as the surprise story here, right? He is a guy who, when we had that great up-and-down finish at the end of the first set of stages, you know, he hung on, he was in the lead, you know, rah, 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 now get out of the way and let the real GC contenders settle this. And he kind of has it. He's done a really good job of knowing where his limits are. And in fact, after today's stage where he, you know, lost another 20, 25 seconds, he's still said, you know, well, I made a mistake yesterday. Like I went back to my own pace too quickly. Like he didn't stay on and suffer as long as he could have. And to me, that sort of says he's still figuring out where his limits are on these kind of tougher mountain days. It makes me think he's got, you know, still more development potential. Still, he's not an incredibly young rider, but still pretty young. And, you know, I think it would be great if one of the low countries had a serious GC contender, not just a guy who kind of showed up and surprised people.
He's only 24. I'd say he's pretty young. I mean, by saying he's not young, you make me feel old. So I want to say that he's young so that I can still feel kind of young.
I mean, he's not an espoir.
He's no longer an espoir. That's true. But I agree. Who knows what his limit is? And Astana DS Giuseppe Martinelli the other day was saying that he sees Tom Dumoulin as a potential tour contender with the way that he rides and his skill set. He's not really that well suited to what we traditionally think of from the Vuelta or the Giro for that matter, which is lots of climbs, not so much in terms of flat time trials. But this year, the Vuelta does have a flat time trial. That's going to play into his advantage. And that's where we are now. We are in a situation where Joaquin Rodriguez is leading the race by 1 second over Fabio Aru. And not far behind them, not that far behind really, is Tom Dumoulin. And he's in fourth place. He's a minute and 51 seconds behind Rodriguez and Aru. That may not be enough time for Aru and Rodriguez to stave off what we can assume will be a significant jump that Dumoulin makes after that time trial. He could take between 2 and 3 minutes. It just is going to depend on how tired he is. He's just never really gotten this far in a Grand Tour. So it's everything is still to play for, I think. So I think that's the hot topic on everyone's minds right now. And that's one of the many things that we had in mind to ask expert of Spanish racing, longtime cycling journalist, and Velo News European correspondent Andrew Hood. So we reached out to Andy to get his thoughts on what's been an exciting race so far and what looks to continue to stay exciting over the next week. Andy Hood, welcome to the Recon Ride.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I feel flattered.
Well, you are kind of a Spanish racing expert. And having been at the race at least the last couple of days, we kind of figured, well, we kind of had to chat with you. So what can you just give us generally what your impressions are so far of the Vuelta?
Yeah, I think it's just been a really highly unpredictable race, hasn't it? I mean, just seeing the big names drop off the map quite early, immediately getting expelled, Froome crashing out, Quintana and Valverde not quite having the legs to really challenge for the overall, and you know, seeing guys like Aru and you know, the big story is Dumoulin. You know, what a great performance he's had.
Yeah, he's been. I think you could probably say like the big surprise of the race so far. Is there anybody else other than Dumoulin? This is kind of something kind of I was curious about that maybe that is flying a little more under the radar that we should be paying attention to as well.
Yeah, I think we you know, kind of good confirmation from Mica. You know, he's punched into the podium contention in this Vuelta. I mean, for him, that's a big goal. I mean, I think he'll be kind of the odd man out on the time trial shakeout tomorrow in Burgos. You know, you just kind of see maybe, you know, Aru and Pareto still being able to finish on the podium. I think Mike might be the guy left out. So he might miss out on that podium dream. The big goal he had was really, you know, top five podium was the big goal. And then Chavez, too. I mean, what a great ride he's had. I mean, he was another guy that people always talked about as potential, maybe a Grand Tour rider. Up to now, we hadn't really seen that much from him. You know, had that nasty crash a year or two ago. But he's had a fantastic Vuelta as well. So, you know, that's the great thing about the Vuelta. You get a chance for some of these guys that maybe had bad luck earlier in the season or young guys to have a chance to, you know, really show themselves really for the first time on the Grand Tour. You even had guys, you know, guys like Dombrowski racing in his first Grand Tour and he's had a good result as well.
So you've covered like a zillion Vueltas. Do you have a specific number? Like, have you been keeping track?
Yeah, I really don't know because I kind of started coming over here in Europe over quite a few years ago already now with the internet boom back in the mid, kind of late 90s, kind of got me over here to Europe for the first time. Did a couple of Vueltas then, and then I didn't really come back to the Vuelta until about 2002. And I've done most of the Vuelta every year since then, probably just because I am based here during the racing season in Spain. So a lot of times, you know, I might not cover the entire race start to finish like you would maybe do at the Tour or the Giro, simply to kind of keep my wife happy.
So with that kind of wealth of experience, what do you think really sets this year's edition apart?
Yeah, I think you're just seeing just how hard the Vuelta has become over the last couple of years. You know, back in the day, everyone talks about how the Vuelta really was the easiest of all the Grand Tours. It almost was like and the race was almost on siesta mode. Even not so long ago, about 10 years ago, they still had they started to shift towards these shorter, more explosive stages, which I think has been picked up on even by the Tour and the Giro over the last few years. I think which actually makes for more exciting racing than those long 240K stages that are just these races of attrition. But the Vuelta started to tick up in difficulty over the last 3, 4, 5 years. I think you saw some of the comments just from Cavendish over the last day or so about how saying people don't want to come to the Vuelta anymore. And the Vuelta was always the preferred race to prepare for the world because you had some race miles. It really wasn't that hectic. It wasn't that dangerous. It wasn't that hard. But now we're seeing some high-profile crashes, some caused by motorcycles, unfortunately. Yeah. But we're just seeing the Vuelta get really hard. I mean, what was it, like 8 mountaintop finishes, a few more hilltop finales, I remember even just talking to Tyler Farr a couple of years ago. He said, man, this is hardest Grand Tour of the year now, the World Cup.
So do you think, I mean, you've got a, I've definitely got a sense of what the riders are thinking about this sort of new Vuelta. Has the fan response changed at all too?
Yeah, I think we're, I've been really surprised at the amount of fans on the road. Even just day before yesterday, a really huge crowd. I was surprised, turned up for Alto Campo. Driving up to the finish that day, I was just stunned at how many people were up like Tour de France crowd. And I think what they try to do as well is kind of take the race into these smaller little towns and villages that really get behind and excited about having the Vuelta in their communities. Because not so long ago, they used to just take the Vuelta from big city to big city. It would just go from, you know, say from Malaga to Murcia to Valencia to Barcelona. And, you know, as everyone knows, a bike race in a big city is usually just a big nightmare. No one really likes it that much. Cuts off traffic. You can make a big house and move around. And the racing isn't really that exciting either, just finishing on big city roads. So they've taken it to these little villages. In fact, when the Vuelta route came out this year, I hadn't even heard of half of these places. I've been, you know, spending a greater part of the last 10 or 50 years of my life in Spain. And a lot of these little towns I've never even heard of before. So they are taking it into what they call España Profunda, kind of the back roads of Spain. And it's made for much more exciting racing. It's made for the fans, the Spanish public getting behind it. When you go to these little towns, you really get the sense that little town is very excited to have the Vuelta in their community.
And so now kind of the marquee question, what everybody wants to know of the Spanish racing expert. We have gone through the last summit finish. Now there's a big time trial ahead. The top two riders are locked together, Rodriguez and Aru, but Dumoulin is not far behind, and he's obviously really good on the time trial. So in your esteemed opinion, who's going to win this race?
Yeah, I don't think it's, everyone's talking that Dumoulin's going to take 3 minutes in the time trial. He could take 3 minutes and he could take more. I mean, the question, we just don't know really, do we? I mean, Dumoulin, I think, he's been digging in deep to hang in there. He kind of lost, you know, 15, 20 seconds a day the last couple of days, but he's still, you know, obviously left within 2 minutes of, Aru, and Perito. I think obviously in the past we've seen Perito just have some tremendous, breakdowns in time trialing, you know, with that 1 year, I think it was, 2010, he lost, 6 minutes when he was having the leader's jersey at a kind of a really flat 40K time trial. And then, you know, he had that collapse against Contador a couple of years ago in the mountains. So Perito, you know, the poor guy, he's come so close to winning a Grand Tour. My kind of heart like to see him win just because the guy's been so close. He had that heartbreak finish in the world a couple of years ago in Rui Costa. You know, he lost the Giro by 16 seconds to Leder Hosdahl. I mean, Perito, he's got a great palmarès anyway, but man, he's come so close. You could have had maybe a Vuelta, a Giro, and a world title on a palmarès. It would have been one of the greatest Spanish runners ever. So, you know, the heartstrings are saying, oh, you'd love to see Perito win, but, you know, 2 minutes, Dumoulin taking on Perito. Yeah, I think it's going to be very close. Dumoulin, I think, going to be tired. Third week time trial, it's never going to be the same as if it's like in stage four in the first week of Grand Tour when everyone's fresh. And, you know, even looking at the results, you saw in the Vuelta Pais Vasco this year in a shorter time trial, you know, Ramirez has only lost 4 seconds to Dumoulin. It was a little hillier course and kind of had an uphill kicker to it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, Rodriguez can just pull something out and maybe had a great ride, but I don't know. I think it's not even going to be decided until Saturday stage anyway.
Yeah, there are a couple of, not necessarily summit finishes, but certainly some climbs in between now and the end of the race. Do you see them potentially having an effect on the GC, or do you think it's just kind of be a standoff on those days?
Yeah, I think it really depends, doesn't it, on how much the lead, the gaps are on the GC after Wednesday's PT. I mean, okay, if Dumoulin or whoever has a minute, you know, no one's going to really be fighting for that. But yeah, I mean, if it's 10 or 15 seconds, they'll race in these transition stages. I know on Thursday and Friday, there's a couple of these little hilltop. There's like a little short climbs going into the descent. But man, looking at Saturday's stage, there's four count ones on that course, and those are not easy climbs. Outside of Madrid, those are pretty hard climbs, and you know, Dumoulin does not have a team. So we've seen Dumoulin getting gapped out, losing 20 seconds on these mountaintop finishes. So, I mean, if Haru is within 10 seconds or Carrizo, you know, Sana or Katusha have the teams to really isolate Dumoulin and maybe take that time back. You know, who knows? I mean, Saturday stage is total ambush potential, I think.
I think we've covered all the bases. Andy, thank you very much for clearing some time to chat with us today, and hopefully you can enjoy the final week of the race as much as I know we will.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
So that was Andrew Hood, Velo News correspondent, expert on Spanish racing and just kind of pro cycling in general. He's a longtime veteran covering the sport. Well, I think we've talked enough about the GC situation as it stands now. I think we've looked back enough. Now we can look forward to the next couple of stages and really dig into what to expect over the final week and who we think is going to come out on top, both on these stages and in the end, who's going to come out as the final red jersey wearer. So looking ahead, we have just 5 stages left in the Vuelta a España and no mountaintop finishes, but there should still be some GC reshuffling in between now and Madrid. First up on the docket, probably the most decisive stage left and what I expect will be one of the most decisive stages of the entire race. It is an individual time trial of 38.7 kilometers. It's in the Spanish city of Burgos. And while the profile looks very flat, I would say it's more pretty flat. There are a couple of climbs that I think will potentially give at least some hope to the non-pure time trial specialists.
I mean, there are a couple of climbs we can't figure out because the y-axis on the stage profile graphic is useless. As usual, thank you, Spain.
Yeah, I think that's probably a more honest and better way to put it. We were very critical of the moto crash, not nearly as much as we could have been, I guess. So this is our chance to really go after the organizers here. So I see this as favoring the powerful time trial specialists, but after 2 weeks of racing, it's sort of a who knows situation because it's not going to be the sort of thing where the flatlanders are going to be at the same sort of advantage that they would be if this were an opening time trial or a stage 5 or 6 time trial because we've been in the mountains for several days so far. On the other hand, we're coming after a rest day, so that's a chance for recovery, but rest days often lead to really crazy things happening on the next day as guys find that their bodies are responding in weird ways to having a day off. So all that is to say that I really don't know what's going to happen here, although I do see one rider as the stage favorite. In my opinion, that's Tom Dumoulin.
See, I see where you're coming from there, but Tom Dumoulin was, what, 25, 26 seconds down today, and Vasil Kiryenko was like 25 minutes down today. Going to be a little more rested, going to be a lot less pressure on him. He's really going to be able to ride his kind of race. Not that Tom Dumoulin is going to lean off the pedals because there's a GC battle, but you know, there's 4 more days of racing for him. There's really 1 day of racing for Kiryenko, so he's going to be my pick. Kiryenko was 1 place behind Dumoulin at the World Time Trial Championships last year, so I think a guy who's going to do very well Wednesday.
He was really good in the Giro time trial, and that was a similarly long and not particularly challenging day. So maybe a chance for Sky to get something out of the race that really has not been the greatest Vuelta for them after coming in with high hopes. Stage 18, it's long, it's lumpy. I'm not quite sure that it's lumpy enough that it's going to have huge GC implications, especially not after what's going to be a really important time trial. to me, this looks a little more like a breakaway stage. There's not a whole lot of categorized climbing, but the day does end with a Cat 1 climb of 10 kilometers at 5.2%, and then a descent all the way to the finish line, which to me, that just screams breakaway. Do you see this kind of playing out the same way?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways it could go. It really depends, from in my mind, how close things are on the GC. I mean, if there are really handfuls of seconds versus, you know, 45 seconds to a minute, I can see a lot of people trying to opportunistically, you know, get a little gap over the top of one of these climbs and maybe try and hold it to the line. It's only 13 kilometers from the top of a Cat 1 climb to the finish, but that's still a pretty long way. I think long enough for most well-organized teams and to regroup and let their GC guy go as easy as possible up the climb to still finish with the leaders and not lose time. I don't know about picking an individual out of a break, though, especially at this point in the race.
Yeah, it's kind of impossible. I'll go with Alessandro De Marchi. I like this stage for his various skill sets. I think he's really good at sort of the rolling profiles. Not necessarily the best pure climber in the world on a really hard finishing climb, but he's done well in the past on these sort of rolling days with tough climbs.
I might go with Andrew Talansky. He's a guy with something to prove, certainly the physical ability to defeat the rest of the breakaway up a final climb and ride it into the finish. He had a decent little set of quotes and pictures in Wall Street Journal earlier in the year on descending and road bikes. So, yeah, why not?
Stage 19, another sort of rolling stage. Not a really hard day, but there's, again, a sort of a lumpy finish. To me, just another kind of day for the breakaway. Officially, the last climb is the Category 2 that is kind of far from the finish line, actually. And then there's a descent. And then the last couple of kilometers are somewhat uphill. So the sort of thing where we could see some action with the GC guys, but I don't know. I just see this as a breakaway kind of day. I think Movistar is going to be really interested in trying to get something out of the third week of this race now that their GC aspirations seem to have gone up in smoke. So I am going to name Giovanni Visconti my favorite for this stage.
I really wish I had a better picture of what the end of this stage was like, because I really feel like this could be a sprint day. I think if everybody, you know, doesn't go completely ballistic up these two climbs, they're not that tough. I kind of want to pick John Degenkolb just because, you know, he's been having kind of a tough time. He was tied for butt naked last today, about 33 minutes behind the winners. He literally, there was nobody behind him on time and one rider behind him on the finish line. Valerio Conti of Lampre Merida, if you're curious. But there was the fact that Degenkolb had a teammate in Johannes Strollinger makes me think that he probably paced the group and the other two were just sort of along for the ride. But yeah, I you know, if it's not a super steep climb and the whole group gets there and everyone's really, really tired, I think it might be. It might be the John Degenkolb moment. We'll see.
Stage 20, it's a mountainous day and a hard day, but not a summit finish kind of day. There are four Category 1 climbs. In terms of metrics, they are all pretty similar. They're all 10-ish kilometers with gradients between 5 and the upper 6% range. So the sorts of climbs that over the course of the day, they're going to wear down on the legs of the riders, but not as hard necessarily as, say, stage 11 or stage 16. But I think it's going to be really, really tight on GC when we get to this stage. So I would expect, or at least I would hope, that there's going to be some action on these climbs as riders try to get something out of the race. I think, unfortunately, we've seen over the past couple of years a number of instances like this where there has been a late mountain stage that we expected a lot of action on, and it hasn't quite delivered, but I am hopeful. I'm optimistic about this, largely because I think Joaquim Rodriguez really wants to win a Grand Tour, and I think he's at the point where second and third was just going to be a huge bummer for him. So I'm hoping that means he gives everything and tries to go on the attack, and that others try to go with him as well. That's what my hope is for this stage, that to cause some action in the finale.
This is a bizarre little stage. It's kind of like Looking at the profile, it reminds me a lot of some of the rides I do around Fort Collins, because there are lots of climbs, but there aren't that many roads, so you kind of end up looping around. And in fact, the final climb on this day is the first climb of the day as well, just backwards. And it's really unique in that it's a Cat 1 climb, but they really stay plateaued after the top of that finish. So even though it's about 17K from the end of the race, like, there's definitely time to lock in and even extend a time gap over that flatter section. I kind of see a lot of GC guys, I don't know, 8 to 10 people, kind of getting over that top of that climb together and really working to put time on whoever hasn't quite made it. That said, probably going to be a sprint out of that smaller group on the way down at that finish. And I mean, there's, you know, maybe a Valverde if you can keep up. But I like Joaquin Rodriguez too, just because he is going to be in all sorts of beast mode looking to win a Grand Tour. I think it's his best shot. We'll see how the time trial goes. But I have a hard time imagining him in a more favorable position.
Stage 21, it is a parade-esque sort of day, at least in the beginning, into Madrid. Less than 100 kilometers of total racing. It's sort of kind of lumpy, but nothing I think that's going to stave off the eventual sprint in the end. So I see John Degenkolb finally taking his stage win here. I think he's the strongest sprinter in the race, despite the fact that he hasn't come away with a win yet. And he's really hoping to shine at Worlds. And by the time we get to Madrid, Worlds is not going to be very far off. So I think he's got to be up to or really close to being at his best by then.
Yeah, as much as I don't want to pick Degenkolb twice, he's, despite his kind of underperformance this far, still the strongest guy in the race. That said, there's a lot of sprinters in here. You have two Van Poppels, you've got JJ Rojas, you've got
Sparagli.
Yeah, from his big MTN Quebeca win. Leonardo Duque of Colombia, also a sprinter. I mean, who knows? They're going to be coming into this stage tired, but it's not like the parkour is exactly going to rivet them. So a different sort of sprinting situation.
Important to note, Ilio Caiza on the start list was the winner of the final stage at the Giro, which looked to be a sprint stage from the start, and managed to sneak away there. So you never know. You could see something like that happen here.
Maybe he'll fall off his bike and still ride in for the finish again.
Yeah, that would make for a pretty entertaining Eurosport highlight reel, which I've watched many times as Carlton Kirby goes nuts. So that's all 21 stages of the Vuelta a España, the final Grand Tour of 2015. I think it's that time. It's that time for us to make our last stab at predicting who's going to win the race. It's going to be really, really hard. I think it's going to be a really close finish, much closer than the other two Grand Tours this year. Really closer than any recent Grand Tour that I can think of. That's what I'm expecting, at least. Because there are a couple of guys near the top who are just so close. Aru and Rodriguez are so close right now to each other. Micah not far behind, maybe has the edge in the time trial. And then Dumoulin just behind Micah, I would expect, is going to blow them all away in the time trial. So that leaves things pretty wide open among those four guys. I think Joaquim Rodriguez could actually surprise some people in the time trial. I'm relying mostly on his Tour of the Basque Country time trial success, where he was only 4 seconds behind Tom Dumoulin. And it was the Pais Vasco time trial, which is typically somewhat climber-oriented, but it wasn't an uphill climb. So I don't know that that necessarily says that the only reason he won is because it was the Basque Country time trial. I think he has dramatically improved as a time trialist since 2010, when he was, what was it, 6 minutes off of...
It wasn't pretty. It was
Peter Velits.
It was up there with Rasmussen in 2005, which, if you haven't YouTubed it, you're really... Final time trial Tour de France, Rasmussen, just fantastic. Everything that could possibly go wrong. Guy just muffing easy corners and flying off the road. But yeah, no, Rodriguez is underrated as a time trialer, probably because he's not Chris Froome, but he's also not a total clown. He's a guy who knows how to ride his bike and ride it hard and steady. Obviously, it's not his strength, but I think he'll do better than people are expecting.
Yeah, and especially after such a long race, is whether or not Dumoulin can really come back and take 2 minutes and then hold on over the next couple of days. Anyway, I think I'm going to go with Rodriguez to finally take that big Grand Tour win. So I'm going against my better judgment by saying that Rodriguez is actually going to come away with something that's been so elusive for him. But I just think, you know, the signs are all there. He's looking really good right now. And even if he loses time in the time trial, there are opportunities for him to come back afterwards. So I'll pick Rodriguez as the overall winner and maybe going with the heart a little bit there. But Tom Dumoulin, I don't see him losing that much time in the mountains to come. So I got to say he's at least going to be second, I think. And Fabio Aru, I guess that means he's third, although wouldn't surprise me at all if he wins the race.
See, I find myself thinking that Rodriguez is really the smart pick, the least picking with your heart kind of pick. He's got the most experience here. He's shown over the past 2 days a real ability to put in time in the mountains. Yes, they're uphill finishes. They're not uphill finishes coming up, but at the same time, they're not gimmies, you know? If there is somebody who can put time in, if he needs to put in time, it's Rodriguez. Astana has been really good as a team, but as you said earlier, Aru didn't look amazing today. Rafał Majka has actually been having like the stealth race, and I kind of want to pick him, but I also don't want to pick him because it's like kind of the stretch pick. I don't know. I'm going to go with Rodriguez. I think, you know, the experience really helps him kind of keep a cool head. He's going to lose some time in the time trial. He might come in 20 seconds behind Dumoulin on GC after this, and I don't know if that's going to be enough time for Dumoulin to handle the rest of the race. But after that, I'm going to go with Dumoulin. I'm going to take him in second, and I'm going to pick Majka in third, just because I think Aru is maybe just not quite... He doesn't really know how to be up there on GC and have a good time trial, even though it's something he's not good at, generally speaking. I think, you know, maybe it'll get in his head a little bit. I don't know. He looked tired today too. So, but yeah, those are my top three. Regardless of how this race turns out, like it's kind of hard to be not fired up for the last couple days of racing. It's a very short little third week to this, almost like just a coda. You've got that parade stage at the end. You've got a TT on Wednesday, and it's not like there's a ton of racing left, but the racing that is still there is going to be really close. Like the downhill finish after the big climb really has a way of creating instability in the race. You have to be on your toes, even though there's no guaranteed time benefit if you're feeling good, no guaranteed time loss if you're feeling bad. It should be really entertaining. I'm looking forward to it.
And beyond just the GC, there's still plenty of stages to fight for, which could go to the breakaway type guys. Last time we closed the show, I mentioned that Alessandro Demarchi would be an interesting rider to keep track of, and he did, by the way, go out and win a stage. So
that's a pretty good pick.
Thank you. That's the sort of thing that I'll also be looking forward to seeing is who can come out of this race with a win. Team Colombia has gone the entire season without winning a pro race, which is kind of a bummer. I tend to root for Team Colombia, and I was pretty frustrated when they were excluded from Giro d'Italia contention this year. So I think they're going to be firing on all cylinders, trying to come away with a win finally. And they have a lot of talent here with Rodolfo Torres, Fabio Duarte. So those kinds of guys, I'm hoping will be doing their best to try to come away with a victory. You know, Europe Car, it's been a really hard year for them. I'm going to expect them to be going crazy trying to get in the breakaway. So I wish we could get more stages where we get coverage right from the start of the day, because there's going to be, I think, really, really hard fights to get into the early moves on the next couple of days after the time trial. Well, we'll be back very soon, because while the Vuelta Peloton is mixing it up in the mountains in Spain, a whole different peloton will be taking on the urban roads of Quebec and Montreal. A lot of really, really big name riders coming to Canada this year, as it is so close to Worlds, both temporally and geographically. So great start lists to watch for. I'll be at the races getting several riders to guest star in our show. So I think a lot to look forward there. Hopefully you'll be able to tune in and check that out. So we'll see you or you'll hear from us pretty soon. Until then, enjoy the Vuelta rest day. This has been the Recon Ride Podcast. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.